ever logged into your bank account or shopped online and felt that, like, hope this is really secure feeling.
Oh, yeah.
You're definitely not the only one. So today we're diving into cybersecurity, specifically in the EU.
Right.
How they deal with user access management, keeping all that data safe.
Yeah, and it's a space where, you know, the EU has been ahead of the curve for quite a while. They recognized really early on that, you know, the digital world, it needed its own set of kind of safeguards.
Yeah, it's like they were building digital fortresses back when everyone was still figuring out how to, like, you know, use email.
Right.
So walk us through those early days. What were some of the first things the EU did?
Well, you know, going back to the early 2000s, they were already putting in some of those, you know, very basic cybersecurity protocols. But a big turning point, I think, came in 2013 with what's called the NIS Directive.
Okay.
Network and Information Security Directive, if you want to get technical.
Okay.
But this was about establishing a kind of baseline for cybersecurity across all different nations in the EU.
So the NIS Directive, this is less like good advice and more like actual rules.
Yeah.
What kind of impact did that have?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, think about it. Before the NIS directive, you had, you know, all these different countries in the EU kind of tackling cybersecurity in their own way.
Right.
Which led to, like, a very fragmented approach, you know?
Yeah.
So the NIS directive, that was all about, let's harmonize these efforts. Let's create a united front against cyber threats.
So instead of, like, a patchwork of security measures, it's more like, we're going to build a wall, like an actual fortress wall.
Exactly. And that's key because, you know, cyber threats, they don't exactly, you know, stop at the border.
Right.
And the EU didn't stop there. 2019 took things up a notch with the EU Cybersecurity Act.
Ooh, okay. And that sounds serious. What made this particular act so important?
Well, it went beyond just setting rules. This was about establishing trust. The EU Cybersecurity Act, it introduced something called mandatory certifications for digital products and services across the entire EU.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, you're buying a new smart TV and you're worried that it might be hackable or someone could, like, spy on you through the camera. The Cybersecurity Act, it was designed to prevent those kinds of things from happening, ensuring that anything digital, it met really strict security standards. Before it even hit the market, even got to consumers.
So it's like a stamp of approval, like a digital stamp of approval from the EU.
Right.
Saying like, hey, we've looked at this. This is good. This is secure. That must have really shifted things in a lot of industries.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All of a sudden, you've got sectors like energy, healthcare, finance, all those areas that handle incredibly sensitive data. They were required, mandated to up their game in terms of, you know, risk management, cybersecurity, all of it.
It's one thing to say, hey, it'd be really great if you did this, but to have it be law is a whole other thing.
Absolutely.
Knowing that, you know, cyber threats are constantly evolving, I'm going to guess that the EU didn't just stop there.
You are 100% right.
Okay.
They did not just stop there. In 2021, they proposed the NIS2 directive, designed to address these increasingly complex cyber threats we're seeing in the world today. And then there's DOAR, the Digital Operational Resilience Act, that was 2022, that was specifically focused on making the financial sector more resilient.
So the EU is consistently updating their defenses, realizing that this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, it really is. It's constantly evolving, this field. And I think the EU is really showing that it's committed to staying ahead of the curve when it comes to cybersecurity. But, you know, what I think is really interesting is it's not just about the technology here. It's about people. It's about processes.
And that's something I always find so interesting about this whole topic. Like, it's easy to think cybersecurity, that's just a tech problem. But it really comes down to people, right? And the decisions they make.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you could have all the fancy systems in place, all the latest and greatest, you know, security tools. But if the people using them aren't, you know, doing their part, it's not going to matter very much.
Right.
And I think that's why this approach that the EU has taken is so interesting, you know, emphasizing that kind of top-down, organization-wide cultural shift.
It's not just on the IT department to figure out how to, like, you know, lock everything down.
Not at all. It really starts with leadership, you know, with executives setting the tone, creating this culture of cybersecurity from, you know, from the top down. They're the ones who are allocating budget for those tools we talked about, for training, for making sure everyone feels like this is part of their job, not just, you know, the IT department's problem.
Right, right. Like, you know, that saying, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
Yeah.
So you could have the best engineers in the world building your digital fortress, but if someone leaves the, you know, side door open.
Precisely. And that actually, that brings up a really good point about, you know, engineers, speaking of.
Yeah.
Because they played a really critical role in all of this. They're the ones who are actually building and maintaining the systems that are controlling access to all that sensitive information.
Right. So they're like the architects of this whole thing, making sure that the like, you know, the blueprints are good.
Exactly. They're the ones who are responsible for, you know, when a new employee comes on board, making sure they have access to the right systems, the right data. And then when people change roles within the organization, making sure that their access changes accordingly. And then, of course, when someone leaves the organization, making sure their access is completely revoked. And that's actually where things can get really tricky.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you've got human beings managing other human beings' access to very important information. And there's always, you know, the possibility for human error.
Yeah, totally. Which is why, you know, having those clear policies in place, those clear procedures is so important. But even then, you need someone watching, you know. You need someone who is constantly making sure that everything is working the way it should be. And that's where our cybersecurity analysts, those digital detectives, come in.
Yes, exactly. They're like the guards patrolling the perimeter, yeah. You know. Constantly monitoring those access logs, looking for any kind of suspicious activity, anything that looks like someone's trying to break in.
So they're really analyzing those patterns, mm-hmm. You know, looking for anything that seems off. What happens when they find something? Like, is there a big, like, red button they push?
Well, I mean, not quite that dramatic, but it is, you know, it's all about acting quickly to contain any potential threats. So they'll investigate the incident, they'll figure out what happened, how it happened, and hopefully, you know, that will help them prevent it from happening again. But there's one more really important layer to all of this, and that's the auditors.
The auditors.
Right, because they're the ones who come in and they make sure that everything is on the up and up, you know, that everyone's actually following the rules and that those digital fortresses we keep talking about are actually as secure as they're supposed to be.
Right, they're like the cybersecurity equivalent of like restaurant health inspectors.
Exactly.
Making sure no one's cutting corners.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're completely independent. They'll come in, they'll review everything. Processes, documentation, the technology itself, all the security measures. And they're making sure that everything is in line with all those EU regulations, which, as you can imagine, are quite thorough.
They make sure everything is actually clean in the kitchen of cybersecurity. But let's actually break down some of the specifics of how the EU approaches user access management. I've heard this term RBAC thrown around a lot. What exactly is that?
So RBAC stands for role-based access control. And it sounds, you know, kind of complicated.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty simple idea when you get down to it. Imagine like you've got an organization, you've got different departments, right?
Right.
You've got marketing, you've got finance, HR, whatever it is. Each department's got its own job to do, its own data it needs to access to get that job done. RBAC is really about making sure that people can only get to the information they need to do their specific jobs and nothing more.
So instead of giving everyone the keys to the castle, you're giving them a key to just their office, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Limit the potential damage if something goes wrong. And that's a really important principle in cybersecurity. It's called least privilege. But how does RBAC actually work in real life? Well, it starts with really, really careful planning.
Yep.
Even before you write a single line of code, organizations, they have to map out their entire structure, every role, every responsibility. How does data flow between these different departments?
So it's like creating this roadmap of access privileges, figuring out who needs to be able to go where and why.
Exactly. Yeah. And once those roles are all hammered out, you know, the responsibilities, then you can start actually building that access control system around it. And this is where it gets kind of interesting because, you know, access, it isn't always so black and white.
Right, right. Yeah.
You might have someone who needs access to certain files during work hours, but obviously not after they've clocked out for the day. Right,
right, right.
Or maybe their access level should change depending on if they're working remotely or if they're actually in the office.
So it's not even just about who you are. It's like when and where you are, too.
Exactly. Context is super important, especially, you know, these days with so many people working remotely, having these flexible schedules. It's more important than ever.
Right.
But even having a really, really good RBAC system, that's just part of the puzzle, right? You need those really clearly written policies and procedures about user access.
Like, you've got the blueprints for the digital fortress,
mm-hmm.
but you also need the rule book, right? Like, what are the rules for letting someone in? What happens when someone gets a promotion or switches teams? How do you revoke access when somebody leaves the company.
Exactly. And having all of those answers really clearly documented, that's absolutely crucial, both for security, but also to make sure that, you know, you can prove that you're following all those EU regulations.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And speaking of documentation, you know, keeping those detailed records of everything, that's really, really important, too.
Oh, yeah.
Every time access is granted, anytime it's changed, revoked, it's all got to be logged. It's all got to be tracked.
So it's like we're keeping a digital paper trail so you can go back and see exactly what happened when and hopefully why.
Exactly. And when those auditors that we talked about come knocking those logs, they are worth their weight in gold because they can see, okay, was the right access granted to the right people at the right time for the right reasons? But here's the thing about all of this, about user access management. You can't just like set it and forget it.
Right.
It's got to be an ongoing process. You got to constantly be reviewing it, adjusting it.
Because people change roles, new threats pop up. Like the whole digital landscape is always changing. So how often do these reviews normally happen?
That can really depend on the organization, the industry. But in general, it's a good idea to review everything at least once a year, if not more often. And you don't want to just go through the motions with these reviews. It can't just be checking a box. You got to really dig into the details.
Yeah.
Figure out, okay, where are the potential weak spots? And then make changes, you know, make sure things are still working the way they should be.
It's like we're giving that digital fortress regular checkups,
yeah,
making sure that, you know, the walls are still strong, the defenses are holding up.
Exactly, yeah.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive on cybersecurity and user access management in the EU, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
I mean, we've covered so much ground today. From like, you know, the very early days of cybersecurity in the EU to the nitty gritty of how this RBAC thing works and, you know, all those audits that we talked about. But honestly, if there's one thing I want you to remember from all of this, it's just, you know, the next time that you log into your bank account or you're accessing your medical records, even just browsing online, just take a second, take a moment to appreciate the fact that there are all these systems, all these people working behind the scenes to actually keep your information safe. It's a wild world out there, right?
It is. It is.
And understanding even just the basics of this stuff is so important.
It really, really is. And on that note, we will leave you with this thought. As you're moving through this increasingly digital world, how much control are you comfortable giving up in the name of security? It's a question worth thinking about. Until next time, stay curious.